This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, giving a boost to affordable housing in Northern Kentucky. First up, as an adventurer, author, and speaker, Jeff Ault has been offering humorous life lessons from the trail for two decades. His first book, A Walk for Sunshine, was about his hike along the Appalachian Trail, an adventure he dedicated to his brother, who has cerebral palsy. When his brother-in-law tragically died, Jeff and his wife set off on a hike across the Pacific Crest Trail in California. That led to the book, Four Boots, One Journey. His other books include Get Your Kids Hiking and a children's series featuring U.S. National Parks, The Adventures of Bubba Jones. Jeff joins us this afternoon to share some of the life lessons he's learned on the trail, and you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jeff, good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
It's great to be here, Mark.
Jeff, what got you hooked on hiking in the first place? How did all this begin?
It started with a family trip to the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and the seed was planted. Our parents let my brothers and I grab the essentials we thought we would need and head up the mountain for a night in the woods on the Appalachian Trail. It was the hardest, scariest thing I'd ever done, walking away from my parents in a cooler full of food and staying a night in that dark forest. And my muscles were sore, but I felt like I had accomplished something, and that remained in me. And as I grew into an adult, I realized, wow, how healing that was. And so I went back and as an adult and really got into this and haven't looked back.
How old were you when you made that first venture onto the Appalachian Trail?
I was about 14 years old, and I was with my two older brothers, and yeah, we had never done anything like it. We didn't have the right gear. And at one point we were laying on the side of a mountain out of breath, and a ranger came hiking down the trail and looked down at us and said, "You better get off your duffs and get up the trail to the shelter because nightfall's coming." And we just thought about all the animals out there, and that was all the motivation we needed. And yeah, so, and you don't do that in this modern age of letting your 14-year-old children, you know, head out into the woods like that. But back then, things were different.
Yeah. How much of the trail did you hike at that age?
About 10 miles the first day, and then we went back down the mountain the same way. So 20 miles in a two-day period.
So at age 14, you made a 20-mile hike.
Which is pretty significant because it was straight up the mountain from Elkmont Campground all the way up to Double Spring Gap Shelter on the Appalachian Trail near Kleeman's Dome, which is the highest mountain in the national park there and on the entire Appalachian Trail.
And then you decided as an adult you're going to do all, what is it, 2,160 miles? Is that the length of the Appalachian Trail?
Yes.
You decided you were going to do that.
So I returned with my stepfather to the Smokies, and on one weekend we just looked at each other and had this gleam in our eyes around a campfire on a Labor Day weekend trip, and we decided we were both going to walk the Appalachian Trail. And I decided I was going to do it continuous, and he did it in sections. And then I decided to share it with my brother, Aaron, who has cerebral palsy and lives at a home called Sunshine.
If you do it all at one time, I mean, how long did it take you? How many days was this?
It took me 147 days, which is about the average. It takes anywhere from 4 to 6 months for most people. And I was a week shy of 5 months. And the current distance is 2,190 miles. The trail changes in distance each year because they relocate sections to prevent erosion. And so it's changed a little bit as far as distance goes, but it's still one long trail.
Yeah. How challenging is this trail? How risky is this trail?
Well, yeah. When I hiked it, only 15% of those who attempted it finished. Now the percentage has gone up a little bit, 25% finish, but 75% don't. And it's because it's grueling. It's really difficult terrain to walk on. I mean, horses aren't allowed, but it's not made for horse either. I mean, you have to watch every step. You're walking through all kinds of weather. You're going up and down. It's not flat at all. And, you know, you need to average at least 12 miles a day to make it from one end to the other in one season. So the attrition rate is quite high.
And this runs from, let's say if you start in the south, it starts in Georgia.
Springer Mountain, Georgia.
Okay, and then in the north it finishes
Mount Katahdin, Maine in Baxter State Park.
Wow.
Yeah. So, so when you look at the whole thing, it's mind-boggling. But one of my quick lessons was that you can't do that. It's mentally defeating. You have to just break it down to that daily goal. And so just if you, I would try to get 10 miles in before lunch. And then I knew I only needed 2 miles to go if I wanted to stop. And I've hit my average of 12 miles a day. So that way it was mentally doable. And just like any goal I taught myself, if you break it down to a daily task, then it isn't overwhelming.
How many people go into this? I always think of that Robert Redford movie, A Walk in the Woods. How many people go into this not really knowing what they're getting themselves into? They think, oh, I'm just going to go walk this trail.
You do see a lot of ill-equipped, unprepared people that have no idea what they're getting into. And I can't say enough that when someone does ask me, what should I do? I say, well, before you go investing in all this gear, rent it or borrow it. Go with somebody who knows what they're doing and spend a few days out there just to see if you really want to do this. And then if you liked and enjoyed the experience, great. Learn from your mistakes and get out there again and then go buy the gear and make plans. So a lot of people make a decision before they really put their toe in the water.
How much physical preparation does it take, Jeff? I mean, is this like training to run a marathon or something like that? You should be in pretty good shape and you should maybe just take some days and walk some short stretches and build yourself up that way?
Yeah. The best training would be, if you could, to just start walking and hiking, and you could use the trails around wherever you live. And then cross training, running and cardiovascular workouts and weight training. A lot of cross training is beneficial. And then taking shakedown hikes with all of your gear to make sure that the pack fits right, the boots fit. You want to try out the food you're going to eat to make sure you like it. You know, it may sound really cool to go eat certain granolas or oatmeal every morning, but will you eat it? Because you need to stay, you know, healthy, and you need to consume lots of calories. And so if you do all of these things, the more training you do, the better off you're going to be, because it's going to build your psyche to be able to do this.
Yeah, I've seen people walking around my neighborhood with a backpack. So that's what they're doing then.
No doubt, yes. And in the winter months, what I would do is take my backpack to the gym, and I'll put the treadmill on full incline and even walk with little dumbbells to simulate trekking poles and just train on a treadmill in bad inclement weather.
So when you started off as an adult, not when you were in your teenage years, but when you started off as an adult to walk the entire distance of the Appalachian Trail, what was going through your mind at that point? What were you thinking?
Well, I was excited and scared at the same time, because, you know, now I'm telling everybody, yeah, I'm going to do this. And I'm also doing it as a fundraiser. So I'm, you know, there's a lot on the line here. I'm speaking about what I'm going to do and training and I felt pretty good about it, because, you know, I camped and hiked as a child, and I had all the right survival skills that I would be fine. But that, I've never spent more than 2 weeks in the woods. And so I'm going to be out there for half a year, and I'm going to be out there alone, you know. So that was a pretty like quiet feeling to contemplate, was, you know, waving goodbye to my family down in Georgia and turning away and walking into the woods. That was probably the most nervous point of my journey, you know, the walking into the unknown. But it was quickly replaced with excitement and a half a dozen blisters. So.
What about when you finally got to the end of things? When you went from Georgia to Maine,
right?
You went that direction. So when you finally get to Maine, and what were you thinking at that point?
Wow, it's funny. I morphed into a nomad. At first, I couldn't wait to get into town to get the shower and eat the pizza I was craving. But as I walked further, I felt like I'd become one with the wild. I mean, I knew every sound in the woods at night. You know, I knew what made each smell. You know, so I was nervous that this journey was going to end, and I was frightened at civilization. I started having these thoughts of, oh my gosh, I have to leave the woods now, you know. So it was like a happy sad. The ultimate goal was to get to Maine, but then when I got there, I didn't want it to end. So it was the ultimate goal for 5 months, and it's just amazing. It was such a powerful experience.
What's the worst thing that's ever happened to you on a hike?
Well, the first day, the painful blisters. I mean, that's probably the most painful thing that can happen. I mean, it's like blowing all four tires on your car going down I-75. And here, I didn't expect this, and I had trained with these boots, and I went through a pack of moleskin in 2 hours, which is this adhesive that you cut little squares off and apply to the hot spot, hopefully preventing the blister. And I don't know why I'm getting these blisters, because I had worn these boots for months, and it turned out, in all the excitement to live my dream, I inadvertently put my inserts in the wrong boots on the first day. So once I corrected that, wrapped my feet in duct tape, things were much better.
What's that, what's the benefit of making this connection with nature? How does this help us as people?
Well, you know, tons of research is now coming out to prove what I knew, that your creativity goes up. There's a study that was just done that proved that just 4 days of camping and hiking in nature increases your creativity by 50%. And there's another study that proved that a 90-minute walk in nature can prevent depression. And there's another study that shows that just 40 minutes of walking, not in an urban setting, but in nature, increases your cognitive ability to do basic tasks. So it's so profound that you don't have to hike the Appalachian Trail to utilize the benefits of this. And it was just, I had this every day. I was solving world problems out there as I walked along, and I'm like, wow. So it sparked so many ideas that here I am 20 years later and still going after all these ideas and coming up with more.
Somebody might say, I don't have time for this, though. How do I make time for this? I'm busy at work and get home and I'm busy. I just don't know that I can do this.
Well, you have to invest in yourself, and you need to schedule time for yourself, because if nature, we've kind of cocooned ourselves with technology and indoors, and the more that we're strapped to technologies and smartphones, the more we need nature. And it can just be the environment around you. You can create a nature escape, like in your work environment, or outside, find the local park nearby and schedule time for yourself and your family and your friends to just do something, even just brief a little bit each day or a few times a week.
So something as simple as maybe having nature sounds that you can play, or
yes,
or some plants in your office.
Exactly. Bring nature inside. So it could be plants. It could be a pet. A pet is part of nature. A screensaver that shows your favorite outdoor scene. If your desk isn't facing a window, why not? If there's a window, turn it so you can see outside. And, you know, just looking up and just having that nature view, it can be so profound. Taking a walk outside on your lunch break, just any way that you can incorporate nature in the outdoors will help you and help you at work and home.
We have a call from Rosemary. She joins us now. Hi, Rosemary.
For you, Jeff, is what did you learn about yourself?
Wow. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi.
I learned that I can do anything if I put one foot in front of the other, and I can take it one day at a time. So I learned that I'm humbled at times, and I learned that nature is very healing. It allowed me time to think. Nature gives me time to think. A lot of times we just kind of go along and in the humdrum of our day and following a schedule without ever truly just being. And escaping into the outdoors allowed me to just think through my life and resort my priorities and what was most important to me, and realign then my energy in what I was doing with my priorities.
We will continue our conversation with Jeff Alton. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Adventurer, author, and speaker Jeff Alt joins us to share some of the lessons he's learned on the trail and discuss the impact of getting out and experiencing nature that it can have on your life. And you can join us, be part of that conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jeff, so let's talk about kids and hiking. How young can you start a kid hiking? They have to be able to walk first? Is that what, at least I think that's what most of us would think.
Oh, no. As soon as they're born, that's the baby carrier, you take them hiking. I mean, that's what you're doing. And the rhythm of you walking is soothing for a baby. So the cool thing about that is that you can go at your own pace, get your own workout in, and the baby's just absorbing everything anyway around them. And so everything you're learning about what you should do with a baby, you can do it outdoors. And so instead of a TV or a computer for those sounds, natural nature sounds. When the baby turns, when it hears a bird chirp, then you label the bird. So everything you learn about what how to teach a child to talk, you can do outside. But it's more profound because there are natural smells and sounds and visions and textures and senses and everything that a little baby needs.
But it's never too early to start with a kid.
Not at all. And so that was a fear that we actually had when our first child was born. And no, we just started walking with her. Matter of fact, we decided to plan a big trip. And my wife had always wanted to go to Ireland. And I said, well, let's walk in Ireland. Let's bring our infant with us and carry her on her back across Ireland. And so we did. And that we never looked back after that. We realized that was so fun. She had a blast. We had a blast. We learned a lot. And we've been sharing that with others ever since.
So if you didn't start your kid as young as you have with your family, say you waited till they're walking or they're a little bit older, how do you get them into it? How do you motivate them to start hiking?
Well, yeah. So if you didn't do all that, so you make it fun. So instead of saying, let's go on a hike, well, that might not sound all that fun.
No.
When you're competing with Game Boy or a movie or the computer.
The smartphone.
Right. But if you say, let's go on an adventure, you've piqued their curiosity. Let's go have a picnic. Let's walk for some ice cream. You know, so there's something to lure them that they like, that's enticing to them. Let's say it's an older child who's now in the teen years and is a social butterfly. Hey, why don't you ask your friend if she or he would like to go on an adventure with us too? And so take out the word hike and you put in adventure.
Adventure.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's say you have the techie child who doesn't want to put down that gadget. Let that child help plan your adventure. Let them do the map search online, find the park website. Say, okay, let's research a path so many miles in distance and what kind of gear we need. And so let them do all the search. Let them use the app, the geocaching app, if the park allows it. You know, so use the tech gadgets that you would use on the trip. So GPS or the spot GPS finder that hikers use. So the headlamp flashlights. There's a lot of technological gear that outdoor folks use.
What about taking some of the lessons that you get in school, math and English and things? Can you adapt them to being out on the trail?
Yes, you can make it into really fun games. Like for the little the preschooler, shapes and colors, you can play I Spy, and you can make it complex or simple. So I Spy something green and oval, you know, talking about a leaf, or I spy something that feels rough and it's brown, the bark on the tree. Or you could make it multidimensional, you know, I spy and just step it up to the level of the child and where they're at. And or I'm looking for, you know, and you can come up with songs to sing, and you can just engage with your child out there. Or when you see an animal for the older child, wow, do you think it's a carnivore or a herbivore? You know, so you can just throw in your science and your math and or just spend time talking to your child, building a memory that they'll never, ever forget.
So there are all kinds of opportunities for teaching on the trail.
Oh, yes, no doubt. And then stopping for hot cocoa on the fall or a winter day and getting your little stove out. They'll never forget that when, you know, and, or at the end you treat them to that ice cream that you promised, and they'll always remember that they walked to earn that ice cream, or, you know, just there's a treat at the end. So
what about children with special needs?
Yes.
Can hiking be beneficial for them?
No doubt. Matter of fact, a lot of research has proven that just even if you're not physically moving, just being immersed. There's a lot of research in Japan where they call it forest bathing, where you just go sit in the forest. But so getting children and adults of all ages out into the woods, there's nature paths that are wheelchair accessible. You know, so whatever the disability is, if it requires something like that, check with the park website. They all have some website and they'll have that information on there. But usually those kind of trails, everybody can do together, and just that social time together And in nature is so relaxing, and it's fun for everybody.
Is there anything you shouldn't do with kids when you're introducing them to hiking or taking them out hiking?
You should step down your adventure. So getting to the summit, how about let's just be safe and just make sure it's so fun they'll want to go again. So if you think, we can go 5 miles, let's back that off. And I mean, unless your child's running 5 miles on the softball field or, during a soccer game, then you could do that. But I would back off your adventure goals to just have fun at first and see what they can do. So it may just be skipping rocks in the creek. If they had fun doing that, you can get your workout in later because you just want them to have so much fun that they'll want to come back and do it again.
You talked about how you used your hike on the Appalachian Trail as for charity.
Yes.
How do people do that? How can you turn your hike into a fundraiser for a cause you really believe in?
Yeah. And so what I did was it became an annual 5K walk and run and roll that evolved from my original charity. But I spoke to local groups, civic groups, and got the word out. And then people followed me along the trail and donated as I walked along. And so on the trail, I wasn't actively fundraising. It was all off the trail. But I used my adventure to create awareness for people with disabilities, and it inspired this annual event that went on for 20 years and raised $500,000.
So what are some good places around the Cincinnati area for hiking?
Well, the Hamilton County Metro Parks are excellent. You have Sharon Woods, you have Winton Woods, Miami University's trails around the campus are just beautiful, or the Five Rivers Metro Park. There's a nice loop I just did up in Germantown that was spectacular, or Caesars Creek State Park has a rugged, I think it's a 12-mile loop around the lake. So there's something for everybody. So you don't have to get in the car and go 5 hours down the highway if you don't have time. And even just getting outside into a nature area of your neighborhood if you can't even break away, but just scheduling time and getting out there, it will be beneficial for you.
Let's talk to Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi there. How you doing today?
Good. Go right ahead.
Good. I just wanted to call and say my mom and dad had different reasons for being outside. My dad is just a great outdoorsman, and he would get me out in the metro parks and for programs and hikes, and we would cast plaster footprints, and we would identify branches in the spring and go on owl count. And he got me started fly fishing when I was very young. I was fly fishing by the time I was 10. And I'm in my 50s now, and I have fly fished 30 of the 50 states and really taken off with a lot of just a great love of the outdoors. And it started as a child, and my mother is a master flower arranger, and we would go out and collect different types of organic material to make arrangements with, and we were just always heading outside. And now I love to garden because of that, and I just love being outside.
So you would say that your parents sparked that interest.
Oh, undoubtedly, and they
excellent.
they were just very interested in giving us a firm education and how things grow and where animals live and what animals eat. And I just love listening to the nature shows. And I just really commend you for, encouraging people to do this because they just seem to stay inside more and more. And, now you meet people who don't even know how to grow a tomato.
So. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Thanks
Linda,
for
thank
sharing.
You for the call. Yeah. Well, that's another good point. Look at the bonding opportunity
right. This
was between the parents and the children in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's amazing. And I totally align with what Linda was saying. And I experienced that as a child and fishing with my dad and camping with my family. And that really planted the seed for me. But there's a whole generation that grew up not doing that almost. And, Ken Burns with his National Park movies, really sparked something too. And it's like, we have 59 classic national parks out there and over 400 national park entities. This is all at our fingertips, and And it's there to enjoy. And there's John Muir, you know, he knew that this is healthy. This, I think it's become our biggest resource, going forward is the outdoors and our national parks, and we need to use it for all that it's worth, and how powerful it is on our kids and the next generation is so big.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Adventurer, author, and speaker Jeff Ault. His latest book is a 20th anniversary edition of A Walk for Sunshine.